Imagine a group of experienced hikers led by the intrepid Igor Dyatlov venturing into the remote Ural Mountains. I've heard it both ways, actually, Ural and Ural, so I'll probably be using an interchanging thing, just so I can be right at least half the time. Anyways, venturing into the remote Ural Mountains, see what I did there, in search of adventure. Their goal? To conquer the unforgiving terrain and reach the summit of the breathtaking Dyatlov Pass. Just an FYI, it wasn't called Dyatlov Pass just then. But what should have been an exhilarating expedition turned into a haunting enigma that has puzzled investigators, conspiracy theorists, and true crime enthusiasts for decades. In this podcast episode, we'll retrace the steps of these courageous individuals, analyzing the evidence, examining the theories, and attempting to shed light on what truly transpired during those fateful days and nights. Join me as I navigate the treacherous slopes of uncertainty, peeling back the layers of speculation and rumor to uncover the elusive truth. I'll start by setting the stage, exploring the context, location, and timeline of events. Then we'll delve into the shocking discovery of the hiker's abandoned tent, with its eerie content scattered in disarray. We'll examine the tragic remains and perplexing injuries sustained by the hikers, raising unsettling questions about their final moments. As we progress, we'll unravel the mysteries of the autopsy reports, discussing the controversial elements and conflicting theories surrounding the cause of death. We'll explore the missing pieces, from the perplexing mutilations to the enduring questions about what truly transpired on that snowy mountainside. Our journey will take us through snowstorms and paradoxical injuries as we consider the impact of natural forces and unexplained phenomena on the fate of the hikers. We'll also address the claims of increased radioactivity and its potential connection to the incident, separating fact or fiction. Separating fact from fiction. Ultimately, we aim to uncover, and by we I mean I, the most plausible scenarios, while acknowledging that the Dyatlov Pass incident remains shrouded in mystery. So, if you're ready to venture into the chilling unknown, join me as I embark on this episode of Did You Hear That? Hello, 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 patrons. So good to be here. I'm saying that like I don't sit my ass in front of a microphone every day. Welcome to episode 6 of Did You Hear That? Oh, it's a cat. Okay. I'm so excited. I honestly just meant to do this as a service to my $5 and up patrons. And not going to lie, I did initially approach this podcast thing as somewhat of an obligation. But now that we're, you know, 6 episodes into the series, I'm really enjoying the process. So thank you so much for listening and being here, because without you, this would have never happened. I feel like I should say that PBS thing. This show is brought to you, brought to you by sponsors like you and yeah, whatever. Oh, come on, man. No, go get out of here. Shoo. How did you even get in here? I thought I closed you guys all out of here. Okay, so right. So let's get down to business. To defeat the Huns. Oh my god, I thought you were done with the litter box. I may or may not edit this out. If you hear this, I didn't edit it out, and I've included it for pure comedic value. Oh my god, get out of here, you. Shoo, go, get out of here. Right. Okay. Damn. Kind of ruined my my Mulan crossover there. Oh my god, BMO. No, no, no. You cannot be on me, please. Okay, I break, guys. No, 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 no. Get out. Shoot. Shoot. Get out. Thank you. Right, okay. So, I put up a poll about 2 weeks ago about what topic I should cover for this week's episode, and Dyatlov Pass was the clear winner. But you might have already guessed that from the intro. The next episode is going to be about the Mary Celeste, and I'm really excited to go into a deep dive on that cursed vessel. There's just something about a lone ship just floating on open waters that is particularly spine-tingling. Right, where were we? Oh, yeah. I was going to tell you about a group of cursed hikers who may or may not have been mauled by supernatural forces. Wait. No, that's the synopsis to Colat, a game that is based on this particular event. I tried playing it. It made me sick. But from what little I played, it was kind of fun. Anyways, oh, and Markiplier did a playthrough of it. You know, I'll plug Markiplier till the day I die. He just seems like a really wholesome guy. He does a lot of charity stuff. Good for him. Anyways, okay, so spoiler warning. Last year, Russia came out with a somewhat conclusive report that the hikers met their grisly end due to a treacherous avalanche. Which, okay, could be true, but this mystery is definitely not 100% solved. And hopefully by the end of this particular episode, I will have educated you on several other theories that might be just as plausible. But it makes no sense to talk about the end when we haven't even gotten to the beginning, right? So let's jump feet first into the beginning of the horror that starts in the winter of 1959, deep in the Ural Mountains of Russia, a group of nine experienced hikers, led by the determined Igor Dyatlov, embarked on an expedition to conquer the formidable slopes of the Dyatlov Pass. As I said before, this was actually not called the Dyatlov Pass. The Ural Mountains, with their majestic peaks and harsh, unforgiving terrain, presented a formidable challenge even for the most skilled adventurer. I lost my place. We're in the script. Fuck. Where was it? Okay, so TLDR, okay? All right, so there's these nine hikers, okay? They are all, most of them are students from, what's the name of the school? Something Polytechnic Institute. What is it? Okay. They're all students. Okay, so can you guys tell that I've gone completely off script at this point? By the way, the intro was written by, ChatGPT. And it was actually this particular script when I realized that ChatGPT you should not trust. Like, I know there is a disclaimer that says the information provided to you will be false, or may be false, but I never really took much stock in that until I asked ChatGPT to tell me a little more about the hikers, and it kept on popping in one person and taking one person out, and I'm like, dude, that person never went to, he was never on this hike. And then ChatGPT was like, oh, sorry, we won't do it next time. So then I reiterated my question, taking, you know, with mentioning, you know, taking into account that you fucked up last time. And then it just kept regurgitating the same info. So yeah, PSA, don't use ChatGPT, at least not for this stuff. Yeah. Anyways, okay, so TLDR. Oh, this is going to be a great podcast. I'm going completely off book. Ah! Nerve-wracking, to say the least. So, Igor Dyatlov, who was a student from UPI, otherwise known as Ural Polytechnic Institute. You know what? Fucking goddamn it. Great. Okay. Thank you, Julianne Mikkel, for telling me how to pronounce Ural Mountains. Now I know. I don't think it took you 22 seconds to tell me how to pronounce Ural Mountains, but that's cool. I hope you got my 2 cents from YouTube ads. All right. Just kidding. I have premium. Okay. So, Igor Dyatlov, who was a student. I think he was a fourth-year student of, this is the TLDR version. Ah, this podcast is already derailed. Who am I kidding? This podcast derailed like 5 minutes ago. All right, so six people went up to a mountain. They died, and now we're trying to figure out what happened to them. How's that for a TLDR? Oh, and there's lots of controversy involving how they died because it's all just such a fucking mystery. All right, so... let's get out of the TLDR and let's go into the specifics. So, there were these 9 people who, and they were, most of them were all students of UPI, otherwise known as Ural Polytechnic Institute. I've seen it written as both Ural Polytechnic and Ural Polytechnical. So, I mean, you know, it depends. Anyway, a lot of people say that the group was consisted of students from UPI, but that is actually not the case. Only 6 were students at the time of the tragedy. So this is the part where I'm going to talk about the people that went. So the first one, Igor Dyatlov, who was the group leader. The 2 young women of the group. Oh, God, this is where I start butchering the names. Zina Kolmogorova and Ludmila. I've seen it written as Luda and Ludmila, although I suspect Luda might be the pet name for Ludmila. Luda Dubanina. And then the other 3 guys, Alexander Kolivatov, Yuri Yudin, and Yuri Doroshenko. So, and then the other 3 people were not students of UPI, but they had connections, except for 1 person, who I will get into later. So, the first person that I want to focus on is Igor Dyatlov, who was born January 13, 1936, and he is the group leader. He's the one who decided to make this trip up to Mount Atorten, which is actually in the Mansi talk, which is, Mansi is the ethnic group in that area. I believe it is translated as, don't go there. so he was seen as kind of the, he was very charismatic. He was a good leader. He was very motivated and very driven. He had actually, he was very good at what he did, okay? He was considered to be a modest, honest, and considerate man, taken from a book. Okay, so let me cite my sources really quickly. So the 2 books that I read, well, actually I read more than 2 books, but the 2 books that I currently have up right now are Mountain of the Dead by Keith McCloskey and... Dyatlov Pass Keeps Its Secrets by Nina Lobacheva. Oh, sorry, mea culpa. As well as, let's see, there were a bunch of videos that I found on YouTube. Please do not ask me to source them all. And the Astonishing Legends podcast, they did a two-part on Dyatlov Pass. And if you are interested in like the paranormal and stuff, which you might be because you're listening to this podcast, unless you're listening to it for sleep aid purposes, which in that case, I should probably talk a little quieter, right? Anyway, so yeah, Astonishing Legends is a duo called Forrest and Forrest Burgess and another guy. Oh my God, how did I forget his name? I listen to them all the time. Anyways, they are a duo who have been doing Astonishing Legends for like years, and they did a two-part on this. And they cover mostly like paranormal stuff like aliens, ghosts, unexplained phenomena. I like them a lot. They're really good. They do tend to segue a lot into different stuff. Some people like it, some people don't. I think it's interesting. Anyways, all right, so let's go back to the Dyatlov group. Okay, so so basically, like, the leader of this group was kind of hardcore, okay? At the time of the tragedy, he was a... Oh, God damn it. Sorry, guys. This mic... God, oh, there's got to be a better way to do this. Okay. I keep hitting the bottom part of the mic where it connects. Okay. If I do it again, I apologize beforehand. All right. So, at the time of the tragedy, he was a fifth-year student in the Faculty of Radio Engineering. He was due to graduate that year, actually, the year he died, 1959, but he asked to continue to stay at the university and work as a ski tourist. So I'll go into the ski tourist thing later. Let's get through the people first, because I think I just spent 5 minutes talking about Igor Dyatlov. All right, so the second person in the group is, now this is where I'm going to go into, okay. Okay, so the second person in the group is called Semyon Zolotarov, born February 2nd, 1921, who actually, he introduced himself to others as Alexander or Sasha. I think Sasha is the pet name in Russian. He was the oldest member of the group at 37 years old. And I see here in the book that it says his death was actually very early in the morning of his 38th birthday. Wow. Yeah, because he was born February 2nd, and the Dyatlov Pass tragedy happened February 1st through the 2nd, depending on how long he survived. No, that's wrong. I'm sorry. It happened on February 1st because it happened on February 2nd because on February 1st was when they were making their final descent. So yeah, Semyon is kind of, he's the interesting member in this party because for one thing, he's not really associated with UPI at all. And he was also, in the military. He was a soldier for 5 years. And his, like, you know, obviously he's a lot more stern and a lot more stoic than the other people in the group because, you know, they were all students, right? Most of them. There were theories about his death, like, because he was nothing like the rest of the group. So there were a lot of theories like, oh, this guy was in the KGB or he was an escaped convict. We'll go into that more later. He had a bunch of tattoos, apparently, that people found to be very interesting. So the thing about tattoos in Russia, I think, like it is in Japan, people don't normally get tattoos unless you are part of the Russian criminal underworld. So, but there were some people who were a little confused about this because he had family who said that he never had any tattoos. So it's like, well, there's tattoos on the picture of his body at the autopsy. And then it's like, well, okay. According to people who knew Zolotaryov, how did I pronounce his name? Semyon Zolotaryov, right? Yeah. He was a tourist guide in Altai in southern Siberia. People who knew him described him as not being, he wasn't a very good worker. And also he appeared to be more interested in, you know, being kind of like a playboy. Which, you know, kind of goes against what I just said about him being stoic. Fuck. I think I have this guy confused with the other guys. I'm telling you, there's so many people here. They're all, the names all sound the same. Anyways, but I'm reading this directly from the book. So he was in the military for 5 years, and he was a bit of a womanizer, and he had a mysterious past. And he was a tourist guide. Now, tourist guide means different things in this context, and I will go into that later. All right, so let's see. The third person that we're talking about is Alexander Kolivatov. Kolivatov. Oh, Jesus, okay. Born November 16, 1934. And he, by the time he entered UPI as a physics student, he had already studied geology or metallurgy. So he was apparently a really good student, and he worked in a secret lab that was organized by the NKVD, which is now known as the forerunner to the KGB. And in 1956, 3 years before the incident, he returned to Sverdlovsk. Oh, Jesus, this name. Okay, so 1956, he went to study physics at Ural Polytechnic Institute. Okay, so at the time of the tragedy, he was a fourth-year student, described as diligent, methodical, and pedantic with leadership qualities. The two girls in the group didn't like him very much because they considered him kind of a bore. But apparently he did have a sense of humor, and he could be funny. So and it says here, despite his pedantic qualities, which included an opinion on every subject, oh boy, no wonder the two girls didn't like him. I imagine being around this person for any extended period of time would have gotten pretty annoying pretty fast. Okay, so the fourth person that I'm going to discuss is George Krivonoshenko, born February 7th, 1935. Oh my god. Another February birthday? God damn, okay. These poor guys. This guy definitely died before his birthday. He was actually not a student. He had graduated from UPI, and he was a qualified engineer. We'll go into more him later, more into him later. The fourth person is, his name is Rostem Slobodin. Sorry, I really, really said that wrong. Anyways, he was born January 11th, 1936. Okay, so he actually got to have his birthday. He is a ethnic Russian. So, not Slavic in appearance, but I believe that means that his features were kind of Asiatic, I guess. I don't know why I would say that. Anyways, he had also graduated from UPI that year, actually, along with Krivoshenko. By all accounts, Rustem was a very thoughtful, kind of quiet guy, likable, amiable. In addition to a very high level of fitness, this is taken from the book, which he maintained by running in all weathers, he also enjoyed trekking and hiking and would take his mandolin on these trips. His father was a professor at another Sverdlovsk higher educational establishment. Don't ask me to say that again. All right. The fifth person we're going to talk about is Yuri Doroshenko, born January 12, 1938, who had been involved with another member of the party called Zina, who we'll go into later. And it was apparently serious enough for them to like meet each other's families, I guess. They broke up before they went, actually. spoiler warning, Zina actually started dating Igor. Oh, fuck. Okay. But apparently Yuri and Zina's relationship had remained amiable. Yuri was modest and reserved, the very stoic type. Oh, I might have confused Yuri with the second guy who turned out to be a womanizer. My apologies. All right. Fifth person or sixth person? Probably the sixth person. This one's a lady, Ludmila, otherwise known as Luda Dubinina, born May 12, 1938, who apparently came from a family of smart people, and she was a third-year student at UPI studying engineering and economics. She was very gregarious and just, you know, kind of like the life of the party, apparently. Like, people just like to be around her. She, apparently there was an incident 2 years prior to the Dyatlov Pass incident where she had been shot in the leg by another member who apparently was cleaning his rifle. And so she was in no condition to continue, but so they had to take her down because this was during a trip up a mountain. And they had to take her to the hospital. And during that whole thing, apparently she was just laughing it up, making jokes, just, you know, just putting everyone at ease, which I think says a lot about someone's character when you can be like that, especially when you're in, like, pain. Like, I know that if it were me and I was, like, halfway up a mountain, I get shot in the leg by someone I trust, no less. And I've got to, like, I've got to go down by sled, probably, to a hospital that's probably, like, a day away. I don't think I would be as high-spirited as Luda was. Yeah, but she was. So I think that really says what she is like as a person. She was also very forthright with a lot of really strong opinions. She was very much... So here's the thing about Soviet Union in this time. Like, everyone, you know, like the Communist Party... like, fucking everywhere, right? Right? Yeah. She was very much a CCP. Can we call them the CCP? Probably not, right? The CCP stands for Chinese Communist Party. Okay, but anyway, so she was very much for the governing party of that region. So there's a phrase that she used to say, called For the Motherland, For Stalin, which I think also says a lot about her character. There is a note here that says that there were some suspicions because when her body was discovered, her tongue was missing. And so there were some suspicions that someone may have removed her tongue for being so mouthy, apparently. But we'll get into that later. If later ever comes, we're already 30 minutes into this podcast. Okay. I haven't even started yet. Ah! Okay. The next member is Zinaida Kolmogorova, otherwise known as Zina, born January 12, 1937. And she was in her fourth year at UPI studying radio engineering. She was a very, very attractive young woman. She was very outgoing, and she had a very good personality. Even though, and she was very And she was very low-key about it. Like, she describes herself as just a, quote, country girl. But she was also very high, she was very intelligent. You kind of had to be back in those days if you were going to college. She was considered to be the life and soul of the tourist club at the university. And like Luda, she actually, on one trip, she did suffer a misfortune when she was bitten by a snake at one trip. And she refused help in carrying her pack before getting medical help, which is, that's pretty insane. Like, I don't know that many people who would, like, be like, no, I'm good. Let's keep going after they've been bitten in the leg by a viper, apparently. That's, ooh, boy. And I think it says a lot about just how staunchly communist this whole group was, because that kind of mentality is lauded in that philosophy, I guess, right? It's expected of for a good young communist to bear suffering and burden with stoicism. She was very low-key chill, but she was also very aware of her looks and how it affected people around her. There's a note here that says, with her personality and intelligence, had she lived, she had the potential to become a minister of the USSR. And that's very high praise, I think. Now, like I mentioned before, she was in a relationship with the leader, Igor. Oh, God damn it. Now, I can't believe I got to look up how to pronounce Igor. Is it Igor or Igor? I've heard it both ways. I'm very sorry, guys. Okay, Igor. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. But the reason that she chose this group to go to Mount Atorten was not because that she was in a relationship with the leader. It was because there was another trip that was going around the same time. But this trip was shorter, and she did not want to go in another trip that would have taken longer. Hate to say this, but hindsight is 2020. If she had gone, she probably would have survived. And who knows? Maybe she would have been a member of the USSR. So it's funny because this girl, boy. So she was in a relationship with the group leader, right? But there was also, one of her exes was also in the group, remember? Yuri Doroshenko. But there was also a third member of the group who appeared to have designs on her, Semyon Zolotarev, the military guy. She was getting attention from three of the seven dudes in the group, which is, oh boy. So there are some theories that this mix of like young guys just vying for her attention could have caused the events of what happened between February 1st and 2nd. All right, the next person is a Nikolai Thibault Brignol. Brignol? I don't know. It's French. His pet name was Thibault, apparently. Born June 5th, 1935. He was quite different from the rest of the group. He was actually the son of a French communist who was executed, and Nikolai himself was born in a prison camp. Yeah. But somehow, he got out, he attended UPI, and he graduated in civil engineering the year before the trip to Mount Atorten. He was popular. He was very friendly, and he really liked to play practical jokes, I guess. And the last member of the group is Yuri Yudin. Now, there's another member in the group, but I'll tell you more about him later. Yuri Yudin, who was born July 19, 1937, and he is actually the only survivor of this trip. He was a fourth-year student in the Faculty of Engineering and Economics. So if you listen to like some podcasts or if you read some books, there are some sources that incorrectly describe him as a geologist. Yuri was not a geologist. And the reason they say that is because he was looking for minerals at some mining camps that the group stopped at before making their ascent up the mountain. But he was actually a economist. So, he was actually not... So the thing about this whole group is everyone was experienced hiking, and they were all very proficient mountaineers. Yuri was considered to be one of them, but he was also dealing with some long-running injuries. So it was one of these injuries that actually prevented him from making that final ascent. So in case there are people who are thinking, well, if he's so sick, then why did he go up there? The thing is, he had been asked twice to go by Igor, the leader of the group. And the first time he said, no, thank you. He accepted the second time, as he said, he, quote, liked to be around Igor Dyatlov, who was always brimming with interesting ideas, unquote. And it's funny because in this note here, Igor describes himself to be a regular booby. But apparently Igor Dyatlov really valued Yudin's organizational skills and asked him to look after the medical side of things as well as equipment and food supplies. And Yuri had also been asked by the Minerals Museum at UPI to bring back samples for them. So there is one more member. His name is Nikolai Popov, and he had intended to travel with them to Mount Atorten, but he missed the train. And so he stayed behind. So he was very lucky, just like Yuri Yudin. Absolutely. I don't know if he's still alive. He was still alive in 2012 when this book was written, and lived in Ekaterinburg, but he's probably deceased by now. It's already been like, what, 11 years since this book was published. Now, there's a side note. So there was another group that was going up to that same area, but they were taking, this group was taking a different route that was going to take much longer. So Semyon Zolotarev and Zina Kolmogorova both changed their minds and decided to go with Igor Dyatlov's group instead. There are some not so subtle rumors that the reason Semyon chose to go with Zina's group is because he found her, like he liked her basically. So I mean, you know, you get it, right? You're in a group with someone, they say, I actually want to go with another group, and then it's like, okay, I might as well, there's nothing keeping me here, right? Interesting, because he was quite older than her. He was like 12 11 10 years older than her. I mean, you know, I guess it's cute, you know, consenting adults and whatnot. Okay, so now that we finally got the groups all talked about, oh god, it's already 40 minutes in and I haven't talked about the fucking trip yet. Okay, so where were these guys going? Right? These people were going up to Mount Atorten, which is in the northern Ural Mountains. Which is 340 miles north of Sverdlovsk, which is where everyone is from. That's where the UPI is. So the original planned route to Mount Atorten was to be Sverdlovsk, Serov, Ivdel, and Vizhey. And it's written here, the second Severny, which is an abandoned settlement, and then Mount Atorten. Once they crossed Mount Atorten, the group intended to go on to Mount Oykachakur and the river north Toshemka before returning the same way. So coming back around. The trek was a very good test of what the group could handle, because it was in a very remote location, and it would take place in midwinter when everything would be way harder. The ranking for this trip was a level 3, the highest level of the highest difficulty. So basically, like ski lift, this would be like diamond level, right? Black diamond leveled. And so like I said, Mount Atorten in Mansi means don't go there. It's not like, so it wasn't like, oh yeah, if you go there, you'll die. But it's just, the implied meaning is that it was just a place that was hard to get to in the winter, and you should probably not make the attempt in bad conditions, which is where they were going to. The area surrounding the mountain was not populous at all. It was mostly, if you did come across people, it would primarily be people from the Mansi tribe, who were hunters who had lived in the region for like hundreds of years. Let's see. So let me take a look at the Wikipedia article now that I finally got that done. Okay, so let's see. They arrived by train at Ivdal. Now, Ivdal is, if I recall, they had a bit of trouble in Ivdal. Apparently they were stopped by the police, because apparently they were being kind of, annoyingly loud, as one would expect college kids to be like. So they did have a little bit of trouble. But they managed to make the trip to their next location. Okay, hold on a second, really quickly. I need to go back. I need to follow their itinerary. So they went by train from Sverdlovsk to Serov. Let's see. Oh my god, this book, man. So Mountain of the Dead fucking goes like forever, really. Okay, so it turns out at Serov they had a bad reception. Like the police arrested them, questioned them for a bit. Notably, George Krivonoshenko, when he started singing, so they're like, they basically gave them like a rule, like, oh, he disturbed the peace of the passengers, so we're gonna take him away and question him. But so they took him away, they released him, because, you know, it's obvious these are just college kids, you know, going on a college trip, right? Really quickly, before I get even deeper into the podcast, I want to talk about what exactly is ski tourism. So, ski tourism in the Soviet Union at this stage was not what we would think. Which is like, you know, like we all get in like a, you know, nice car with heated seats and hot chocolate, and then, you know, guide cracks jokes while he drives us up to the ski lift, and then, you know, we ski down and go and hang out at a ski chalet and meet ski bunnies and get in hot tubs. to the Soviet Union in this period of time, ski tourism was pretty brutal. So it was basically a test of endurance. It was a test of whether you could survive in a very bad environment, basically. It was tough. And the fact that there were these two girls that also chose to be in this group is insane. And it really speaks to the character of these two girls. Also, really quickly, I want to point out, Igor Dyatlov had actually made a previous trip to Mount Atorten the year before. So it wasn't like this was completely new to them. This was not new to them. Igor had done this before. They had no reason to believe that this wasn't going to be a bad trip. There was no reason. So now that we got that out of the way. So once they arrived in Seraph, and remember I told you when they were at the train station at Seraph, they got one of the members got arrested for singing, which is really stupid. But anyways, yeah. So there are some conspiracy theories about why they got arrested. Basically, it's just because there were a lot of apparently prison camps in the area, and also it's a very small town. So if there's new people, obviously you're gonna be really suspicious of them. So they had a lot of time to kill before they could go to Ivdel. So they decided to kind of just hang out at a school close to the railway station. And apparently they got along really well with the school kids there. Xena, apparently, remember the very pretty one? I'm gonna call her the pretty one from now on. Although I don't know what I'm sure Luda's is just as attractive. Anyway, so apparently when Xena started talking with the school children, they really warmed up to her. She obviously was really good with the kids. And when it was time for them to leave the school and go back to the station for the train to Ivdel, the whole school went to the station to see them off. The kids were really upset that they were leaving. And apparently a lot of them asked Xena not to leave and to stay with them. Again, hindsight, 2020, probably should have stayed with him, but, apparently what happened after that, when the expedition group did not return from Mount Atorton, the children wrote letters asking why Xena had not come back to see them, and the surviving member, Yuri Yudin, said he could not reply to those letters because he did not know how to tell them that their, favorite person did not make it back. But it just goes to show, this is how much impact they had on these kids. They were so full of life. And actually, the more that I get into this, it is just a really sad story. The train came from, Sernov. Oh, God damn it. These names are killing me. Seraph. Okay. So, and then they go to, Ivdel. And, once they arrive in Ivdel, the group is about 90 miles away from Mount Atorton. After the short wait at Ivdel, they take a bus to Vigée. They spend the night there. Apparently it was really shitty. They didn't have enough beds, so two people slept on the floor. It was just, this is not your typical pleasure trip. It was very, very bare bones. They suffered before even starting their expedition. So the truck left Vigée from the hotel at 1:10 p.m. on January 26th. And it's a 3-hour journey to the next leg of their trip. They were sitting in the back because there was no room for them. This kind of hardship really affected Yuri Yudin. And he started getting ill, and this is the point where he's kind of starting to get the feeling that he maybe should not continue. But he's still trying at this point. He wants to be there. He doesn't want to let down Igor. You know, Igor's already asked him once before to go. He had to say no the first time. He said yes the second time. I understand why Yuri wanted to not disappoint Igor. You know, Igor was the kind of guy who, you know, he's like the, he's the main character, right? He's Fred in Scooby-Doo. You kind of just want to be around him because he's just a good guy. Probably smarter than Fred, let's be honest. So once they travel from Vigée, after the three-hour journey, they are at a mining camp. And there is a hostel at this mining camp with a dormitory. You know, they get to know, like, the miners and stuff. And it's just, it's, you know, they're just having a really good time. So after that, on the 27th, they have found a local guide with a horse who can take them to the next point of their journey, which was a Severny, or abandoned settlement, which is 15 miles away from the mining camp. So they get to the mining camp, and it is around this time, like the 26th, 27th, when Yuri's illness gets worse. And when they make it to the mining camp, the Severny, he tries to find some, like, stuff. Because, you know, the UPI has asked him to bring back some minerals for the university. He doesn't find a whole lot of stuff the next day on the 28th. But he does find, like, some pyrite and quartz. But he leaves that day after he finds some stuff. I don't know if he took any of his findings back, but he does leave on this day. So once he goes, this is when the journey starts really ramping up. So how they actually traveled is really interesting. So obviously everyone's got, like, packs, right? So basically the first person is basically cutting a path for them, right? They're not really carrying anything because it's hard enough creating a path with their skis. Yeah, they're skiing, by the way. So, the second person is actually, it's the hardest for the second person because they're carrying their full pack, but they're also having to kind of tamp down the snow for everyone else. So like I said before, this is not a pleasure trip. But luckily, in the evening of January 28th at 5:30, they stop for camp and they have this huge ass motherfucking tent. It is a custom tent that Igor and his friend Boris made together. Oh, Igor and Boris, my God. Okay. So it's a tent that's big enough to sleep all nine of them. Would have been big enough for 11 people had Yuri continued the trip and if Nikolai hadn't missed the damn train. Probably a good thing he missed the train. And there were like compartments in the tent that gave some privacy to the two ladies. Although at this point, considering how much shit the two girls have been into, like, I don't think they would have thought much about, you know, oh no, the fragility of femininity or whatever, right? And for this trip, actually, Igor had made a stove himself that apparently was really hard to put together. But, you know, they need the stove, right? Because it's supposed to warm the tent and stuff. So after they have dinner and everything, they, you know, just kind of chill. They sit around a campfire talking and singing. Rustem is playing his mandolin. And after, when everyone's supposed to go to bed, a really bad argument happened. So no one wanted to sleep by the stove, obviously. Which kind of boggles the mind because you think, hey, stove, warm, right? But apparently, it must have been really loud because no one wanted to sleep next to the stove. And an argument broke out. And apparently, George Krivonoshenko was nominated to sleep there. But he did not have any say in whether he wanted to sleep there. And Krivonoshenko was apparently, like, just apoplectic. Because he had slept on the floor at that hotel in Vichy. And he kind of felt like, come on, you guys are picking on me. But regardless, this goes to show that Krivonoshenko had somewhat of a temper. So the fight that started on the 28th, the evening of 28th, kind of spilled over onto the next day. People didn't really talk about much. It was very frigid between the group. And I mean that in every meaning of the word. So they kept traveling. The weather got noticeably colder. They spent the third night on the 30th camping on the shore of the river Ospia. The temperatures at this point had plunged to 26 degrees Celsius. That's really cold. But apparently the stove that Igor made was working really well. There is no reference as to who had to sleep next to the stove this time around. Okay, so they woke up at 8:30, January 30th, had breakfast, got back on their way. There is a diary that people are passing around to each person in the group to write every day. There's not a whole lot that's written about it. So they are continuing their journey. Their progress along the Ospia River is, there's a lot of ice, but there's not enough ice to actually walk on the river itself. So they move slightly inland to a sledge trail used by the Mansi. Remember I was talking about the Mansi? They are the ethnic tribe hunters in this general area. And then soon they started getting out of the forest, because they were in a forest before. Now they're starting to get out of the forest, and they find a nice place to rest, build a fire, and now it is January 31st. Temperature was between 18 degrees negative and negative 24 degrees. It is recorded that they left Ospia village making slow progress, roughly 1 mile per hour. That's not anything strange. That's expected. They're actually going up an incline at this point. And they can't really see a whole lot. The visibility is shit because it's snowing. They are preparing to pitch their tent around 4 to 5 p.m. that afternoon. The snow cover was about 4 feet deep, and it was still falling. They spent the night of the 31st January at the very edge of the forest before continuing the next day. The final part of the last entry in the diary states, "Tired and exhausted, we start to prepare the platform for the tent. Firewood is not enough. We didn't dig a hole for a fire. Too tired for that. We had supper right in the tent. Hard to imagine such a comfort somewhere on the ridge with a piercing wind hundreds of kilometers away from human settlements." That is basically all we know, because there is no diary entry for the 1st of February. And as we know, this group met its grisly demise sometime between January 1st and January 2nd. And that is where I am going to end this podcast, because it's already an hour long. I will be returning to this, and we'll be talking about what happened that fateful night, as well as the theories of why they ended up the way they did. So, thank you for listening. I know this was highly disjointed. I'm sorry, I did not work with a script this time because I did not have enough time. I'm preparing from a vacation, but I still wanted to do this because I did promise it, and I try to keep my promises no matter what. So, sleep tight, and don't let the back buds bite. I'll see you guys tomorrow.